I made my first quiche Lorraine and the girls went out the window and food became my life.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome back to the Wild Business Growth Podcast. This is your place to hear from a new entrepreneur every single Wednesday morning who's turning wild ideas into wild growth. I'm your host, Max Brandstetter, founder and podcast producer at Max Podcasting. And you can email me at max@maxpodcasting.com to save time with your high quality podcast. This is episode 189.4. Nope, no decimal. And today's guest is Chef Robert Irvine. Robert is a world-class chef who you know from the hit TV shows on Food Network, Dinner Impossible and Restaurant Impossible, as well as the awesome collab show Restaurant Rivals with John Taffer of Bar Rescue, which can be found on Discovery Plus. Robert is, of course, a huge fitness buff, get it, and is a massive supporter of military members, military veterans, and he gives back and gives back and gives back through his Robert Irvine Foundation. In this interview, we talk how he went from serving in the military to becoming a TV chef, TV personality, what he's learned from always being on, always being in the public eye, and how and why he always finds a way to carve out time to give back to the military despite his crazy schedule. I couldn't even pronounce it. That's how crazy his schedule is. It is Robert Irvine, who's coming for you in a boxing match, probably. Enjoy the show. Alrighty, we are here with celebrity chef, and just Robert, because you know we can call you a mix of different things. But Robert Irvine, the man who somehow makes the impossible possible. Robert, true honor to have you on. Thank you so much. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. I hope you're ready.
I am ready. Well, as much as I've prepared for this, I feel like I'm still not prepared for just the mic drops on mic drops you're going to have because you talk a big game. So here we go. No, but I want to shout out first my mom, Joanne, who I think you are like her favorite person on the planet.
Your mom is very smart. I like Joanne already.
I like her too, but that, yeah, you, I mean, just with that line, you're probably her favorite guest of all time, but she's a huge fan of all your stuff, and she actually helped brainstorm some of the questions today, so some of these are from her as well, so shout out Joanne, and shout out you, Robert. So we're going to get into some of your TV shows, which are just awesome, and some of the impossible and possible and all that, but before that, so you started in the Royal Navy at age 15, which I think at age 15, I was excited just to like play some video games and, you know, just chill out, hang out with friends and take naps. So what in the world was that like being in that environment at that age?
Well, it's kind of interesting because I was not a good student at school. My mother caught me playing truant. Basically, she called the house. I answered the phone. It was the demise of Robert Irvine. Took me straight down to the recruitment office. I'd been a sea cadet, which is pretty much like a Boy Scout for the ocean, if you like, for many years. I loved it. I joined the Navy at 15 and a half, to be precise.
I dropped the ball on that one.
That's okay. And spent a lot of time in the Navy before I retired. I couldn't go any further, so I left. For me, most people have their childhood between 15 and 20 kind of thing. You know, they get to experience different things. I got to experience the Falklands. I got to experience a lot of older men on a warship as a young kid, basically. And I thrived in that environment because I think I was already a natural born leader, but very cocky at it. And I think it gave me humility and made me a better leader.
So that, I mean, I can't imagine being thrown into that environment with a bunch of older men on the ship, as you mentioned. But what's something that you think still to this day and throughout your career is a valuable lesson you learned from being in that crazy environment?
I think taking control of a large number of human beings, like being I've always been the youngest leader in an environment, and taking care of somebody else's life you know, if you're on a warship, it's really interesting. It's great when you're at peacetime, but when you go to war, you're in control of that situation, right? Or as much in that situation as you can be. As a young cook, they used to load missiles on the side of a ship. When you go to war, you don't cook. We put everything in a steam kettle, you know, a big pot, turn on the steam, and hopefully at the end, we can eat a hot meal. But each person has a different job, and mine was to reload missiles, SeaCat missiles, on the outside of a ship. So I think it taught me leadership, humility, teamwork, loyalty, all those things which I use in my businesses today. It was a great training ground for me and any young person, no matter which force you go in, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, or Space Force now, I think is a great entrance into life.
I think it is as well. And for anyone who is looking for a good summer internship or something, I think, you know, playing with missiles and cooking on a ship, I mean, why not? That's a resume booster if I've seen one. So let's get to TV, which, you know, naturally from a Royal Navy age 15 and a half to TV. I mean, what a natural jump there. But obviously some things happened in between. But when was the first time that the opportunity presented itself to you to actually, you know, not just cook, but cook on television?
Well, I started cooking really early. I joined a home economics class at the age of 11.
You mean 11 and a half?
No, 11. I was right. I've got my timeline. 11 years old, because there was 30 girls and me. And I thought there's a chance of getting a girlfriend. I made my first quiche Lorraine, and the girls went out the window, and food became my life. The jump on television, I was an executive chef in Atlantic City, and I would do weekend television, you know, local stations, things like that. And I kind of, I don't know, like everything else, you get used to it or was good at it, or, you know, I could tolerate it. And I wrote two shows, funnily enough. One of them was my first show, Dinner Impossible, which was originally known as Fit for a King. And Food Network changed it to Dinner Impossible, but it was based on a year of my life of doing unusual things, going on aircraft carriers, feeding 6,000 people, traveling with the President of the United States. All those things that I did in that year was put down on paper for 13 episodes, and Food Network said, okay, let's do it. And they changed the name from Fit for a King, which was my black 7 series BMW, and they changed it to Dinner Impossible, and it's still running today. It took a 13-year hiatus and just came back.
Oh my God. Yeah, and it's been an incredible run, and obviously has inspired other shows off of it. But Dinner Impossible, it's I mean, you're right there with Tom Cruise and Mission Impossible, as far as, you know, just things that are impossible and having a reputation of amazing. But part of this show, it's like you do things like what you mentioned of, you know, cooking for hundreds of people at a time and getting into these quote unquote impossible situations. What advice do you have for anybody that has a very difficult cooking challenge ahead of them?
I think it's planning, right? No matter what the mission is, you look for the outcome, which is successfully feed people in this case, and you work backwards to get to that point. You know, what time do I have to serve? How am I going to cook that amount? How do I get it to that location? I think planning is something, again, we go back to the military. You start with the end in mind. What is the end goal, and reverse backwards to get to that goal in steps? And I use that process in everything I do, not only cooking, but my business. And, you know, and I think that's it. People don't plan enough. And we always throw in what is the worst thing can happen and make a plan B for that, right? What happens if I burn all the toast? What happens if I, you know, and I think there's always those plan Bs, multiple of them, by the way, in case something goes wrong.
How early in it? Because this is something that I think it applies to cooking. It applies to just to business in general as well. Like, it is good to have plan Bs and contingency plans there. How far in advance of, like, you know, the Super Bowl, the main event that you're cooking for, how far in advance do you get these plan Bs and Cs and Ds and D and a halfs ready?
A little different for me, because when I do Super Bowl parties, it's for thousands and thousands and thousands of people. So for me, we'll be going to Poland, Romania to feed troops in the next couple of weeks. I've already had that planned 4 or 5 weeks. when I travel to Afghanistan, Iraq, Poland, Spain, I have to ship food, number one. So there's a lot of contingency planning for me. It's not like going to the store and picking up some Doritos and something and making food. It's literally planning 6 to 8 weeks out to get food to location because it's on the water.
Here I was thinking the secret to Robert Irvine's success was just endless bags of Doritos, but it turns out more goes into it, doesn't it? So from Dinner Impossible spawned More Impossible, Restaurant Impossible, which has had another phenomenal run, I think. Do you know how many episodes you're up to now? Like, it's in the hundreds and hundreds. Eh?
300. It's been 13 years.
300, which, to put it in perspective, I think Seinfeld was around 180. So you've done, you've done okay.
I didn't get residuals at Seinfeld goes.
Hey, it depends who you ask, but you can bench more than Jerry, probably. So we'll give you that. For sure. Got that in the back. But Restaurant Impossible, another amazing concept and super popular. And I think, I mean, I can, this makes no sense, but I can hear my mom smiling just listening to these words right now because she loves the show so much. But this one, kind of a different ballpark because it's focused on restaurants. And obviously, you know, obviously at the time of this recording, it's been there's never been a couple of years like it's been for restaurants. Of all the different restaurants that you've worked with and helped with and come and possibilized, what to you are some of the biggest key points in creating thriving restaurants?
Well, I think COVID killed off, you know, a lot of restaurants in the States and around the world, by the way. But I think there are certain things that make restaurants successful. Number one is leadership, right? A lot of people get into the restaurant business because their mother or the father, their cousin, whatever, says, oh, you make great sauce, you make great gravy, you make great food, you should have a restaurant. So they max out the credit cards, they get a loan, they go into a place, 6 months later, they have no idea the food costs, labor costs, and everything else, and they fail. And that's where I come in and keep very busy. I think leadership is number one. Expectations is number two. When you set an expectation and hold people accountable, which is number three. So leadership, expectations, and accountability. Don't go into business with your family. Number four. And know your product and know what the customer wants. You know, it's very different if I say, you know what, I'm going to do fish and chips because I think there's a great fish and chip market in Louisiana, when really I should be doing gumbo. You know, there is no correlation between fish and chips and gumbo. So I think it's know what the customers want and give them what they want instead of giving them what you think they want. And I see that every week in all those things, the leadership, the knowing your product, knowing what the people want, et cetera, et cetera. Because unless you give them what they want, they won't come. When they come, you've got to give food, service, and environment they feel comfortable in.
There's a bunch of strong points there. So leadership, expectation, accountability, family. This, I feel like I'm taking a test here. I'm just reading back my notes. But you, those are all key things that translate across business. And I can get behind all those. The one that kind of made me go, is family. Because obviously lots of love for family business, grew up with a family business. And obviously there's pros and cons of working with family. Why do you say it might not be the absolute best thing for the restaurant industry?
Well, number one, it's very hard for one family member to be in control. And it's very hard to fire a family member, whether they're invested in the business or not, because then it goes to, if it's three family members, 33 and a third each, right? Two family members gang on another family member to get them out. It's very, very uncomfortable moving forward with families. And I can tell you that in 11,000 plus restaurants that I've helped and opened, is the biggest problem with families, because one person feels that they should be in charge and doesn't listen to anybody else. And it creates friction. And eventually that friction creates animosity and everything else. And the business fails. If you look at most successful Fortune 500 companies, yes, you may have a CEO, but you also have a board that can vote on things. Families don't have boards. It's this way or that way. And somebody normally goes that way, gone. Because they can't, for the better of the company, coexist. There's an ego, just like chefs. Chefs have egos. You walk into another kitchen, I do that frequently, and you try to be nice to the chef, but he's, you know, he's always going to be, well, it's my kitchen, it's my kitchen, it's my kitchen, you know. And I think families are like that. I would never be in business with any of my family.
And you say that with the best way. Your family's like, Robert, yeah, it's a good run.
Yeah, I would never be in business with families.
This goes across all your shows, but it amazes me all you do. And I mean, the lives you change, the restaurants you change, the people's lives you impact, and you've given back a ton and raised a ton of money for charity. You have your own charity. And so much of what you do is also on camera, which is just like that adds such a crazy wrinkle to things. How has it been for you over the years of doing what you do and being like, hey, you know, like I'm passionate about this stuff. But on top of this, like we've got a camera crew here. We got to make sure this thing is production and has entertainment value. How does that go into the mix?
Well, first of all, I don't think like that. So for me, what you see on everything I do is real Robert. So you can see me angry. You can see me upset. You can see me frustrated.
Robert, you never get angry, Robert.
Oh, that's real. You'll see the vein pop out in my neck or the vein in my head. You'll know what I'm feeling when you see it. One thing I swore when I got into television, I would never fake, never say anything somebody told me to say. I would always be me. It's a good point or a bad point, right? I think the toughest part for me was when I got married or started dating somebody. You're always on. You have a camera in my face. There's a camera crew here to my left right now, getting ready to shoot a different show. And you're never out of the public eye, whether you dribble on a plane or you sneeze and you got, you know, whatever, dribble over your face. Somebody's taking a picture of it. When somebody wakes you up on a plane and you have to be nice when you're really just tired, really dog tired after 8 weeks on the road. I think that's the toughest challenge for anybody that's in the public eye is you're in the public eye 24/7, 365. It never changes. You have to be very careful in what you say, how you look. You know, I shaved every day since I was, you know, 15 years old. My wife thinks I'm crazy, but I do it because that's how I've done all my life. So, you know, I think the cameras change everything. Good, bad, or indifferent. And if Gail's upset with me and my wife, they capture it. If I'm out drinking a beer, somebody's filming it, you know. So you just have to, you have a fiscal responsibility, not only financially, but also with people look up to you and you have to behave because you're inspiring other people. Behave in a way that people think you are. You know, I can't go and sell a scotch or, you know, whatever. I can sell a fine wine because that's my people's perception of me, what I do. But I'm no different in my, if you come to my house now, you'll see this the same as you see it on a set. If you annoy me, I'll tell you, stop being silly or stop being, you know, grow up or whatever.
I figure I got about 3 more minutes before you tell me that I'm annoying you. I'm enjoying it.
That's the difference when you're in the public eye. And you put it in a, I'll put it in a different way. A George Clooney does a movie for 6 weeks. He's on air for 6 weeks, and then he disappears from the limelight. I'm on an episode every week, or 3 episodes right now, every week of television in 170 countries with a billion viewers. I don't get to be off for 6 weeks, which is great for me because that's the life I chose. But I'm doing episodic shows, 3 a week kind of thing. And then in between, I'm doing my military and I'm doing all those things that I do. So I'm never out of the public eye. And I think that's the difference between an A-list actor and somebody like me.
Well, I consider you like A-plus list. So we're going to create a separate list for Robert. When I was 15, I don't think I had any facial hair. So I'm looking up to you just knowing that, hey, you had to shave every day since that age.
But you go out with your friends, right? Or your brother-in-law, or your sister, right? You go out and get drunk and fall down. Nobody cares. They just say, oh, look at that guy.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys.
Right? For me, it's different. I'll be front page news. That responsibility of, so my viewership is from 3 years old to 93 years old. So I always say this on the shows, what I do, my kids follow. They replicate, right? So you have to be really careful when people look up to you as a family show which ours is, or all of them are, that people sit on a couch. And you said it earlier when you introduced me, your mom and you guys sit down for however many years watching my show. Look at the age you are now and look at when you started. So if it's okay for Robert Irvine to do it, it's okay for me to do it.
Exactly. And this is why I go to the gym every day now. No.
Good, good.
Let's wrap up with some rapid fire Q&A. You ready for it?
I'm always ready.
Always ready. Ready for anything life and possibilities throws at him. All right, let's get wild. I don't want to give anything away because I want to make sure people tune in. But you teamed up with Taffer from Bar Rescue on Restaurant Rivals, which is just awesome. I mean, two absolute powerhouses and legends in the space, going at against each other, but also for the common good. What was the biggest thing that surprised you the most about working so closely with Taffer on that set?
Nothing, because I've been friends with John for a long time. He can get angry at the flip and he can be nice at the flip, very competitive, as we both are. So nothing surprised me with John because we've been friends for years, but we've never had the opportunity to work together. Only through John's contract, he can only do streaming, which is great for me because he can't be on linear with me because we have different networks. but it was great to work with him because we have such different approaches but such similar ideals.
Neither of you really have strong personalities or imposing or anything like that, so you got that going.
Yeah.
You've traveled around a ton. What is a town either in the US or around the world that is a really, really good food town, but it might just not get as much love as some of the other famous towns out there?
Oh, that's a good question. I think every small town has one restaurant that nobody really knows about, which is outstanding. I travel literally, I'm in a different city every 2 days or a different country every 2 days, depending on the week. That's a tough one for me. Jeez.
My whole goal here was to stump you. So I'm taking this, taking the W.
I don't know. I think you've really got to research. My wife isn't, when my wife's on the road with me, she picks the food that we eat and dinner. And I got to tell you, she's way better at it than me. She does the research. She's really cool. So I don't know. You stumped me.
Perfect. This is a huge success. Speaking of her being really cool, so your wife, Gail, who's spent lots of time as a professional wrestler, what is something that totally caught you off guard about the life of a professional wrestler?
It's a circus. It's pretty much like me. We whirl into town just like they do. They do the show, they do the meet and greets, and they move on. And it's really interesting because that's my life. You know, we go into a place, we fix a place for 2 days, and we leave. And to be honest with you, if you can't find somebody that's in your space, I married Gail 10 years ago, been together 13 years, and she just fits me. She's the best possible match for me. Not only am I scared to death of her, she just knows my life and I know her life. And we're the yin and yang, if you like. It's a great match. I don't think anybody else can put up with what I do. And I would walk all over somebody else. I'm very strong-willed and so is she. And she stacks up to me 10 times.
Well, now we know the key to your heart. The secret to your heart. We know who you're scared to death of. So we got the card there. Fitness. Can't go this interview without asking about fitness. What is your number one all-time fitness tip for looking somewhat, maybe a sliver of the way you look?
Again, find something you love and pursue it. Fitness is, I've been working out since I was 11 years old. My first Schwarzenegger was my first cover of a magazine, and it was like a 13th hand magazine I got somewhere. I don't remember, but I fell in love with it. And I'm still working out now. I'm a little older now, obviously, but I can't do half the things I used to be able to do. But when I travel with the military, I've got to be able to do, you know, run with them. I've got to be able to jump with them. I've got to be able to, you know. So for me, fitness is part of my life. Again, pushed by Gail, the same, you know, she's very fit. She pushes me even when I feel like I don't want to work out. She's like, yeah, you got to go. Finding the love of that fitness and taking care of yourself and having somebody else to push you. It's better to go to the gym with somebody to push you harder than you would go on your own.
And last one, you mentioned the troops, the military, and And thank you so much for all you do to give back and for all you do to support our troops. And I know it's you spend a ton of time doing it, which is even more amazing with your schedule. What is it that inspires you to spend so much time supporting our military members out there?
I think those men and women that wear the cloth of our nation, of the 1% that wear the cloth of our nation, have decided to do something greater than themselves. And having been in the British military, I totally love that. We travel and we feed and we do the things that we do because I want them to never forget that there are people that care about what they do every day. You know, I think sometimes after 9/11, we were all a great country and we were, you know, let's stick together. And over time, we've forgotten about those people that stand the watch every day for our freedom. And I never want to forget that. I always wanted, you know, whether it's food insecurity in our military, which we have a lot of, not only outside of our military, but 70% of our military is food insecure, right? We've got to do something about that. The people that are 19 and 20 years old that normally, and I just said, are home at Christmas, but they're fighting or ready to fight on the border of Poland if something happens. You know, they signed on the dotted line like I did a long time ago and said, well, no matter what, we'll take care of you. And I think sometimes we forget about that. And that's why I want to make sure a hot meal, a workout, a signing. I took my wife to Afghanistan a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, in the middle of the heaviest fighting in Mosul. And 101st Airborne guys were there. He cooked a meal and my wife wrestled with Jeff Ross, which is a funny thing.
Oh my God. Wait, you the comedian?
Yeah, the comedian.
Oh my
but it
God.
Was so cool to see them having a laugh for 5 minutes in probably some of the worst fighting that you can imagine. And I think that's why we do it, right? We got to make sure that we take care of those who take care of us.
I think anything helps, and you go way, way, way beyond that. Robert, thank you so much for all you do and for your time and just being a big inspiration and somebody so many people look up to. And also for being my mom's boyfriend. I'm sure my dad really appreciates that.
Give her a big hug and a kiss.
Will do. Where's your absolute favorite place for people to follow you if they're interested? And also, is there a way for people to give to the Robert Irvine Foundation if they're interested?
So they can go to robertirvinefoundation.org, either volunteer or I could give money, see what we're doing. You can follow me on Twitter at Robert Irvine. At Chef Irvine on Instagram, and there's a TikTok thing we just started now, which is hilarious because I'm old, but one of my TikToks just got like 5 million views. It's me spitting food out, so I don't know if it's good, but you know, it is what it is. Check out that by all means, and chefirvine.com.
Awesome. Well, Chef Irvine, really appreciate it. Last thing, final thoughts. It could be a quote, word of wisdom, whatever you want. Send us home here.
Yeah, just a huge shout out to all the men and women that wear the cloth of our nation, our first responders, our firefighters, doctors, nurses, teachers. We love what you do. Take care of each other. And to everybody outside of that, just take care of each other. Love each other. Let's feed each other. Not only for the body, mind, and soul, but also real food.
All for anything involving food, whether it's a little food or a lot of food. Robert seems like a guy who knows a little bit about food. Thank you so much, Robert, for sharing your story, your spectacular career and lessons, and all you do to give back. And thank you, Wild listeners, for tuning in to another episode. If you want to hear more wild stories like this one, make sure to follow the Wild Business Growth Podcast on your favorite listening app and tell a friend about the podcast and start doing push-ups with them and just keep going and going, and one day you'll look like Robert. You can also find us on Good Pods, where there's awesome podcasts and podcast recommendations. And for any help with podcast production, you can learn more at maxpodcasting.com. Until next time, let your business run wild.
Bring on the bongos!